3 U.S. versus Metzer. Mr. Daisy?
Yes, Your Honor. All right. Bill Daisy, Indiana Federal Community
That's
Defenders.
Right. We've seen you before.
You have.
Many times. You may proceed.
The Mr. Metzger's case comes before the court on direct appeal. Mr. Metzger challenges the reasonableness of a below-guideline sentence of 235 years imposed for a series of production of child pornography offenses and a possession of child pornography offense. I would submit that it is the most unpopular of causes and the most easily despised offenses and offenders that deserve the highest level of scrutiny from this
court. When you sort of look at the number of months, because I must say I hadn't seen a sentence of 2,820 months before, which is the equivalent of 235 years, but the max that he was eligible for was life imprisonment. So
what he was eligible for was 400 and some odd years. It was limited by the statutory maximum of the each offense to which he pled guilty. But, of course, life in prison for Mr. Metzger is almost certain to have occurred by within the next 40 years at least. Statistically, it is likely to occur in 25.1 years after the day he was sentenced. So it's, you know, the numbers beyond that, I would argue, are just some sort of Alice in Wonderland world that doesn't really matter. It certainly can't matter to Mr. Metzger. I could, of course, gone to the cell block after the sentencing and congratulated myself for having saved perhaps 200 years off the guideline sentence in this case, but certainly.
The calculation was 5,500. 20 months. That was the original calculation.
Certainly meaningless numbers once the day on which Mr. Metzger is certain to die in prison has passed. So, look, the offenses are horrendous, and the district court was very eloquent in discussing the factors that led the court to its conclusion that this was an appropriate sentence in this case. I brief and argue that there are three factors that should in some way affect a decision as to whether this was a reasonable sentence under the circumstances.
Well, in the Sentencing Commission's source book, life is equated under the guidelines to about 470 months. I guess my point is, does it really matter realistically, this 235-year sentence, given what the guideline range was?
Not to Mr. Metzger.
Yeah.
Again, once the sentence is passed, the day in which he'll die in prison for certain. So I suppose item one is death is a great equalizer in certainly all facets of our lives. And when the district court declares that a 24-year-old who committed the same crime deserves the same sentence as a 54-year-old, It misses that great equalizer along the way, that it doesn't have the same effect. It's the maximum penalty a court can impose in a non-capital case is a sentence that assures the defendant will die in prison.
And this sentence that he received, that won't affect his security designation, will it?
If, as I understand it, the Bureau of Prisons requires a designation to a penitentiary if the out date is more than 30 years into the future. So I believe it is true under current Bureau of Prisons policies, Mr. Metzger will be doomed to serve all this sentence in a maximum security penitentiary, which, as we're reminded almost on a daily basis, is a not a very safe place to be, and particularly not a very safe place to be for offenders against children, although the Bureau of Prisons is taking steps.
Well, the judge recommended, the judge was aware of the fact that it would be a high maximum facility and recommended that he be housed at a sexual offender facility at the lowest security level.
Which is where he is. I wondered this morning whether the Bureau of Prisons computers could handle a sentence of this nature and compute a good time credit. It can. It lists, I believe, July of 2214 as an out date for Mr. Metzger, a sentence I've heard referred to not long ago as a Buck Rogers sentence, one that peers into the next century in many ways. I wanted to touch, if I might, on this concept of marginal deterrence and what part it might play in constraining the reasonableness of a sentence. It's sometimes simply put as, if an offender is to have his hand cut off for stealing $5, he would as well steal $5,000 if the penalty were to remain the same. As serious as Mr. Metzger's offenses were, there's plenty of room for much more significant offenders, and no room left for a more severe sentence in practical terms. Reading through the government's brief, pointing to prior cases that have become before this court with very significant sentences imposed, is like taking a trip down memory lane for our district. And it's likewise like taking a trip down memory lane for offenders who treated their cases just as badly as they possibly could after they were arrested. The names of Cunningham, which arises commonly, Mr. Newsom, whose case generated some discussion about the idea of marginal deterrence in sentencing, Mr. Knoll, who received a bell ringer of a sentence before this court, were each offenders that went to trial and handled things just as poorly as a defendant possibly could. Mr. Metzger, once arrested, promptly confessed his guilt. He discussed in graphic detail his relationship with the minor children involved in this case. He pled guilty promptly without a plea agreement. He showed remorse. He accepted responsibility. He had no prior convictions of any kind.
Did he disclose any victims that the government wasn't otherwise aware of?
No.
Now, I take it what you're trying to get us to do is impose a rule that for a defendant like your defendant, a sentence of something less than life would have to be imposed, because there are worse people. He's a horrible person, but there are more horrible people. So he should get a sentence of something less than life. Is that what you're
yes.
saying? And so where is the cutoff? I mean, he's got, what, 7 or 8 victims here, which included touchings and things of that nature, over 1 million images stored. Where is the cutoff? At what point is life appropriate?
Well, going back to the offender that physically injured children, killed children, didn't accept responsibility, had prior convictions for offenses against children, threatened witnesses, there's plenty of room over the top of Mr. Metzger's case that incremental punishment should be available. Looking at some Jeremy Bentham view of the world, that an offender faced with the choice of committing the more aggravated offense could look at the outcome in Mr. Metzger's case and decide there's just nothing that could happen to him for creating the most heinous offense the court could imagine. An offender that's inclined to do so, of course.
Well, it sounds to me from what the judge said at sentencing that he was seeking specific deterrence of Mr. Metzger, that Mr. Metzger showed a long and elaborate history of doing this, and that he was trying to deter him specifically. You can't always deter generally. And so that's what he was attempting to achieve. Would you disagree with that?
A goal of the district court judge, the court made that quite clear. Mr. Metzger should never walk out of prison, in the court's view. At what point does this factor come into play? In Mr. Metzger's case, 29 and a half years, a sentence that statistically would cause his death in prison. And I would argue that either this court's ongoing dialogue with the rest of the world concerning concepts that death in prison is a really, really big deal and that marginal deterrence is a factor in examining a sentence worthy of review. Either those two concepts are just a lot of fluff that have no meaning, or Mr. Metzger's case should go back with instructions that that the court take a look at the point at which...
As you indicated, there was no violence, and there are people who could do more horrible things, but when you look at the guideline adjustment on this child pornography, the adjustment in the manual goes up to 600 images of child pornography, and this number of 1 million is certainly extraordinary.
Well, the record doesn't disclose how many of those images were child pornography. Over 600 is the only conclusion, because the estimate is always in terms of child pornography or child erotica, which is presumably lawful images. But it's fair to say that this computer contained a whole lot of illegal images. I think it's true of all our clients, people either possess no child pornography at all in the world, or they possess just thousands and thousands of images. That seems to be a continuing thread.
You're into your rebuttal, Mr. Daisy. I don't know if you want to save time.
I doubt that I'm going to use that rebuttal, and in fact, I will not.
All right.
So I thank the court for its attention.
Thank you. Mr. DeBroda or Broda? Broda?
May it please the court, Mr. Daisy. The government cannot meet his burden here to show that the district court abused its discretion when it sentenced him within a properly calculated advisory sentencing range and considered all of the 3553 sentencing factors. This is not a case that turns on a claim of procedural error or an error in understanding how the Sentencing Commission would score out this case, which leads to an extremely high total offense level. The court considered the defendant's age, addressed it at sentencing. He considered the military service, the two factors that the defendant mentions in his appellate brief. But at the end of the day, he just didn't weigh them in a way that led to a significant difference. The way the judge chooses to weigh those factors is a discretionary call for that district judge. In this particular case, the other factors were simply more significant. The district court was in the best position to balance, as this court's observed in other cases, the effect of the defendant's age and health, and to consider the harm and nature and circumstances of the offense. In this particular case, we believe, addressing one of Judge Tinder's questions, that this judge actually sought both specific and general deterrence in fashioning the sentence. And here's how we get there. First, it's clear, as the judge commented, that he intended this sentence to be an effective life sentence. But when you look at the mathematics of how he fashioned the sentence, he took the 15 counts of production of child pornography, which featured seven different girls between the ages of 8 and 11, and he applied a 15-year penalty for each of those 15 acts. That leads to 225 years. What he did there, in effect, and he talks about this in discussing the question of what portion of the sentence would be consecutive to the others, is he is allowing an incremental punishment for each of those 15 acts of sexual exploitation of those children. That actually serves purposes of general deterrence, more so than the specific deterrence of this defendant. And there are things that this defendant can do other than simply die in prison. He can serve as an example. Another judge at another time observed that the law is a potent and omnipresent teacher, and it teaches by example. The sentence of 235 years may not matter to this defendant, but it may matter a whole lot to the victims. It may matter a whole lot to the other offenders who may be thinking about victimizing people. And it matters to the government, because deterrence, general deterrence here, matters a great deal when you're talking about crimes against children offenders. People who commit these crimes have...
Well, it was well below what your office argued for. I think you argued for 460 years, something like that.
I think our specific sentencing recommendation was 235.
And I appreciate what you're saying about it mattering, say, to the victims. But after a point, it does become unrealistic, where the time could not possibly be served, where it exceeds even the biblical ages, figures who lived long, long lifespans, even longer than Judge Bauer. It becomes unrealistic. It just becomes meaningless, doesn't it?
I don't think so. First, let's focus on, as it's applied to this particular crime. What we're dealing with here are offenders with low impulse control that need to have a strong sanction to overcome the rationalization they have to do in their heads to decide to engage in this kind of conduct. What we're talking about here is we're talking about making the point that you can't do this kind of thing to a girl who's 8 and get away with it without some incremental punishment. So what it's saying is we're going to apply a dramatically high sentence for people who do terrible things like this. And the hope is, by having it be well recognized that we don't tolerate this kind of behavior, that we label it, if you will, with society's and the law's stamp to say that's 235 years worth of pain and suffering you've inflicted there, worth of wrong. It's not 40 years worth of suffering. If we thought about a deterrence theory that said, let's consider the life of the defendant, let's say he's 80, are we going to give him a 4-year sentence or a 5-year sentence for this and say, you know, 15 counts, 7 victims, all under 12, that's only worth 4 years because that's how long he'll live? Clearly, that's where the problem breaks down when you start thinking about life expectancy.
Well, what about his argument that, what about the people that are more horrible than Mr. Metzger?
I read the case law of this court differently than he does. It's citing specifically the Bauer case in this court, 2007. In that case, the defendant received a statutory maximum 30-year sentence for one count of production of child pornography in that case. And writing, the court states it rejects the argument that child pornography producers have a marginal deterrence problem when you could have a worse defendant than Mr. Bayer, perhaps. The two things the court pointed to was that there were other potential charges that would be lodged or potentially lodged against defendants who do worse things. If you kill the child in the act of production, for example, that's an independent federal crime which carries the death penalty. If you molest the child, you could be subject to consecutive time for the molestation charge. Consider that you can commit production of child pornography by using the minor even where the depiction isn't even produced, because the crime is using, enticing, coercing the minor to engage in the conduct for the purpose of producing the visual depiction. Now, here we actually have sexual contact with three of the victims, an attempt with the fourth. He actually did that. But with the rest of them, he's not touching them. Those instances where he touches the minor are a separate crime that he could be prosecuted for as well, depending on the jurisdiction, state versus federal, and so forth. The court pointed that out in the Bayer case, that there is a way of reaching cases where the conduct is more aggravated if the child's injured and so forth. Also, the court pointed out that where there are those types of physical injuries, let's say there's a violent rape, more evidence is created, the cases tend to get more police attention and so forth. So those are two disincentives. The court defined marginal deterrence this way. It's a confusing concept, but it defines it this way. Does treating different crimes the same encourage additional crimes? In this particular case, there's no reason to believe the marginal deterrence argument as applied to Mr. Metzger gets us anywhere if it didn't get us anywhere in the Bayer case. Now, why isn't Mr. Metzger prosecuted for what he did on film in some of these instances? Because there's no point. Judge McKinney took away the purpose of that and to put everyone through more trials and so forth by achieving an effective life sentence, getting that specific deterrence. But the overall point of a 235-year sentence is to look at the other policy factors under 3553. Balancing those factors is what the district court is allowed to do, and when considering that this is within the sentencing guideline range, there's no abuse of discretion here in how the court chose to do that. Now, when you talk about the purposes under 3553, a very high sentence serves the purpose of providing just punishment for these crimes. The fact is there are 15 counts. And the fact is a million picture possession case, whether it's child pornography and child erotica, which is what the record shows, it's still a staggering amount of material. Judge McKinney notes in imposing the sentence that that's a high number for him. And when you look at the total offense level here of 47, the guidelines ran out of imagination at 43. So what you have here is you have a highly aggravated crime, and at a certain point where you get so much criminal activity, when you get so much harm, so much victimization, so many victims, those offenders are so bad they call for the special and general deterrent kind of solution that this defendant received. At the end of the day, the judge did balance these factors. He did what this court's asked it to do, and he did it in a way which adequately considered both the grounds that have been specifically raised and discounted the argument that his age being 54 made any difference. He is not elderly and infirm. His physical impairments don't matter here when measured against the things that he's done. Finally,
doesn't he become a difficult prisoner to manage with really no hope? There's nothing he can do to achieve.
There's a straight calculus to this. If he is at a maximum security penitentiary, the only thing worse than that would be Florence, Colorado. And at the end of the day, people who are serving life sentences, there are many of them serving life sentences in penitentiaries, know that they would gain a much worse situation with much fewer privileges if they go and commit some internal prison offense, a sexual assault or doing something that would otherwise violate the rules in a serious way. So it's really the threat of a long period of lockdown at Florence, Colorado, or lockdown at a level 5 institution. For example, Tucson has one of the facilities for this type of offender that makes sure that they stay in line. And we hope that they do that. But the Bureau of Prisons knows about this problem, deals with it, and one of the ways they've been dealing with it is by finding selective institutions that try to concentrate this type of offender in with other offenders of this type, and then they manage that. with at least three different levels of security classification that I'm familiar with.
And he's in, counsel said he's in the lowest level security designation for the institution he's in.
That was the recommendation, Your Honor. My understanding is, and I can tell you how I believe this works, I agree with the proposition that if your sentence exceeds 30 years, it may result in a higher security classification, possibly including a level 5 institution. These rules, though, are complicated, and I'm not an expert on them. But what they do is they will do a security assessment. They will consider the length of the sentence and other factors, and that's what, that would determine where he's going. But what they do not do is they don't ignore this problem for all sorts of reasons. They try to manage it. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. I believe you were up. Your time was up, and so we thank counsel for their fine briefs and oral argument. We'll take the case under advisement. Call.